What is the use of being elected or re-elected unless you stand for something?
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold and written by Gene Holloway. Mr. President, at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Today's Mr. President drama will begin in just a moment. But first, a word about our purpose in presenting this series. To Americans, there are no more stirring stories in the world than the stories of the lives of the men who become presidents of the United States. Their deeds are direction pointers for the American mind, sources of inspiration and courage to young and old alike. People today are more interested than ever to know the intimate, interesting, and inspiring facts about the lives of their presidents. Now, for the first time in radio history, the American Broadcasting Company takes listeners behind the White House reception rooms and ballrooms into the privacy of the breakfast room and the study, where presidents are shown as individuals, with human doubts, laughter, love, and faith. Mr. President is true biography built around the men who filled America's highest office. See if you can name the president upon whom this episode is based.
In Washington a few years ago, the men in the White House devoted a good deal of time and thought to the existing tariff. And the more he thought about it, the more disturbed he became. And the more disturbed he became, the more determined he became to abolish that tariff. Listen closely and see if you can guess who the president was when all this happened. You're going to meet him first in his hotel room in St. Paul. He is with his wife, and he's just about to make a speech.
Darling, we must go down. Martin's already here.
Do you like this tie?
I think it's very becoming.
You don't think I look better in the blue one?
I like you in all your ties.
You know, my dear, that's probably how you got me.
How I got you?
Why, of course.
Now, wait a minute. Who asked who to marry who?
Well, I asked you after you pushed me a little.
Why, Mr. President.
Mm-hmm. Well, come on. You know, that's a very pretty dress.
Well, I'm glad you noticed. I didn't think you ever thought about anything but that tariff anymore.
The tariff? Why, I haven't thought about the tariff all day. That's the farthest thing from my mind right now.
Oh, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Now, turn off the light, will you, tariff?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yes, Mr. President. You haven't thought of the tariff all day,
No, haven't given it a thought.
I see.
Doesn't my wife look beautiful tonight, Martin?
Thank you, dear. Isn't he diplomatic, Martin?
I wish your husband was half as diplomatic about the tariff as he is about you.
This tariff issue is a mighty important problem, Martin.
All right. But let it rest until after the election, Mr. President.
No, sir. It's already been allowed to rest long enough. And now that I've reached a decision, I'm going to act.
A few more months aren't going to make a bit of difference to the tariff issue. And they might make a big difference in whether you're re-elected.
Do you expect me to run the government for the good of the country or for my own personal good?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Holding off this issue isn't that important.
It is to me.
You have to think a little bit about your own good right now. If you bring up that tariff issue, you're going to commit political suicide. You're going out on a limb, and the Republicans will saw you right off the tree. Now, why is this tariff such an obsession with you?
All right, you listen very carefully, and I'll try to explain it in words in one syllable for you. First of all, what is a tariff?
Well, a tariff is a tax.
Yes.
It's the money the government gets for letting foreign goods into the country. And I don't see why you care if foreign exporters have to pay a high tariff. After all, it's not the foreigners you're supposed to be interested in. It's the Americans.
That's exactly right, Martin. It's the Americans I'm interested in. If we keep the present tariff in another 6 months, we're going to have a surplus of $140 million in the Treasury.
Good.
Oh, don't be a fool, Martin. The Treasury is becoming a hoarding place for money needlessly withdrawn from trade and from the use of the people. I tell you, that money is crippling our national energies, preventing investments in productive enterprise, to say nothing of inviting all manner of schemes of public plunder.
Well, it's still foreign money. A high tariff is a protection to the American working man. I doubt if anybody but you sees it in such a threatening light.
Oh, no, it isn't. Not by a long shot. The workingman has got to understand this. When a high tariff is claimed to be necessary to allay high wages, it results in a large increase in the price of nearly everything else right along the line. Before the workingman gets home with his wages, he will stop to buy some article and have to pay the large price which the tariff permits on the article. And there goes his wages.
Well, that may be true, but just the same...
Now, you take the rancher.
Oh, must I?
The sheep owner is told that a high duty on imported wool is necessary for the benefit of those who have sheep to shear. In order that the price of their wool may be increased, but the sheep owners are not reminded that they themselves must wear clothing and use other articles made from the wool they sell at high tariff prices. And that in the final analysis, they as consumers return their share of the increased price they got and more. Now take the farmer.
Oh, I'm sorry I ever mentioned the subject.
It's of vital importance to every American, Martin.
Well, Congress has refused to revise the tariffs, and that should settle it as far as you're concerned.
Well, it doesn't. I'm going to launch a crusade against that tariff. Don't forget, there's a power over Congress, Martin.
You?
No, not me. The people. I'm going to get the tariff issued to the people. I'm going to make them understand what the tariff means in their lives, no matter what I have to do to make them understand it.
All right, all right. But wait until after the election.
No, it can't wait. I'm going to get this issue before the public.
How?
You'll see how. I know exactly how to do it.
I know you have to leave for the cabinet meeting. I just wanted to ask you what you like for dinner.
Oh, corned beef and cabbage.
Oh, you had corned beef and cabbage last night.
Did I?
You certainly did.
That's right, I did. Well, warm it up again. It was good.
All right. Your name should be Cassidy, or O'Brien, or O'Toole, Faith and Begorra.
Well, I think I'd better be getting into the meeting. Oh, I'm going to try my message to Congress out on the cabinet today. Wait until they hear what it is.
I'm very proud of you.
Would you still be proud of me when I lose the election?
I'll be even more proud of you for sticking to your principles. I've much more admiration for a man who goes down with a principle than the man who deserts and lets the ship sink.
Now, you're a clever woman, Frances. No wonder you were able to get me to the altar.
Now, see here, Mr. President, I did not get you. You talk as though you were beaten over the head and dragged there.
I was. And you know the only reason you got away with it.
What?
You're so pretty.
You know, Mr. President, you may be pretty close to 30 years older than I am, but at times I feel like your mother. Little did I know that at 22 I was marrying to become not only your mother, but the mother of a tariff.
No, as a mother, I can't say much for you. But you're a wonderful wife. Come on, I've got to get to that cabinet meeting. Give us a kiss, darling.
Us?
The tariff and me. Goodbye. I'll see you at corned beef and cabbage time. And while you're sitting here smelling that gorgeous Irish stuff, think of me sweating over my speech. You see, gentlemen, those who buy imports pay the duty charged thereon into the public treasury. But the great majority of our citizens who buy domestic articles of the same class pay a sum at least approximately equal to this duty to the home manufacturer. It is notorious that competition among our domestic producers is too often strangled by combinations, frequently called trusts, which have for their object the regulation of the supply and price of commodities made and sold by members of the combination. The people can hardly hope for any consideration in the operation of these selfish schemes. Under our present laws, more than 4,000 articles are subject to duty. The necessities of life used and consumed by all the people the duty upon which adds to the cost of living in every home should greatly be cheapened. Our progress toward a wise conclusion will not be improved by dwelling upon the theories of protection and free trade. This savors too much of bandying epithets. It is a condition which confronts us, not a theory, gentlemen. This is the substance of my annual message to Congress.
What? Your entire message, Mr. President?
My entire message.
But, Mr. President, it is customary at this time for the President to make to Congress a detailed report of the national interests.
Well, gentlemen, I am so determined that my feelings get before the people and the tariff become a matter of public knowledge that I am going to forego the addition of any other topic. This way I know the tariff is going to make the headlines.
Well, it's a very courageous move, Mr. President.
Gentlemen, I realize I am bucking some mighty powerful interests in this land, but I intend to send this message to Congress and let the chips fall where they may.
Well, Mr. President, whatever our party may think of the message, it's a foregone conclusion that the Republican Party will be delighted with it.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Yes, sir. It will be interesting, to say the least.
This periodical, The Nation, says of the president's actions, "The president's message is the most courageous document that has been sent from the executive mansion since the close of the Civil War." Well, well. Commercial Gazette says of the president, "Ignoramus, dolt, simpleton, firebug in public finances." The New York Tribune's opinion is, "The president speaks as a British manufacturer anxious to be admitted without any charge to a period of the best and largest market in the world." Yeah, I was afraid of that. The London Morning Post says, "Sooner or later, Congress will recognize the wisdom of the president's advice and resolve to reduce the federal revenues." I wish the London Morning Post would keep its British mouth shut. Now we're in for it with the Irish in this country.
Well, you can do what you want with your votes in the next election, but I'm not giving mine to any British sympathizer. You all know good and well what Britain has done to the Irish, and nobody that goes palavering around the English is any friend of ours.
Well, Mr. President, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I did. I've been reading the papers, and I've been listening to the people. And the prospects of your re-election are pretty dim. Now, Mr. Spender here has a suggestion that I think you should give some close attention to.
What is it, Mr. Spender?
Well, Mr. President, now, this situation calls for some pretty shrewd politics.
Oh?
I refer specifically to New York State. It looks as though Governor Hill is going to win a renomination there. And if he does, New York State is definitely lost to us.
And what do you suggest I do, Mr. Spender?
Well, sir, as one of the heads of the Democratic Party, I suggest you use every bit of influence you have against Governor Hill.
No, I won't do that.
Mr. President, you've got to clip Hill's wings. He's after the presidential nomination.
Now, this is a free country. I am not going to interfere in the politics of New York State, whatever Mr. Hill's ambitions are.
But if he's reelected in New York, he's going to have even more power than he has now. Hill wants to head the delegates at large to the convention. What would you say if he managed to get the presidential nomination?
I'd say more power to him. Personally, I should like nothing better than to step out and live my own life for the years that are left to me.
The party has to have you, Mr. President. If you aren't renominated, it will look as though your party considered your term a failure.
Don't you care if you lose the election, Mr. President?
Yes, I care. Because the party cares. And you care. I know. I realized the position the party would be in if I stepped out. So I'm going to run again. But I'm not going to play any dirty politics to get elected. I'm not going to ruin another man's career, and I'm not going to give up the tariff.
Then I'm afraid you're not going to be president.
Well, then, so be it.
What are you doing?
No, I was looking over these textbooks. They're for Indian children on reservations.
How can you be so calm with a convention going on?
Did you see what the Republicans are calling me?
What?
The Beast of Buffalo.
Oh, I think that's horrible.
Little did my mother ever think that her proper young son would grow up to a title like that.
I got a letter this morning asking if it was true that you beat me and abused me.
And did you say yes?
I said, and I quote, I can wish the women of our country no greater blessing than that their homes and lives be as happy, and their husbands may be as kind and attentive, considerate and affectionate as mine.
Oh, God love you.
The Beast of Buffalo, indeed. And while we're on the subject, what's happened to that tariff of yours?
Well, a modified form of what I asked is being discussed. They're calling it the Mills Bill.
Oh, I certainly wish they'd settled something.
Yes? Oh, Mr. Spender, come in.
Just come from the convention. You've been nominated unanimously by acclamation.
Oh, that's splendid.
I see. Well, thank you, Mr. Spender.
And, Mr. President, you've certainly won one part of your battle. You've put both parties into a position where they're going to have to take a definite stand on the tariff.
No. If the tariff goes through, that will be the major victory of my life, no matter who wins the election.
It's going to be an uphill fight, Mr. President, but we're with you. We may not all have seen eye to eye with you on your way of conducting this campaign, but win or lose, we're with you.
Thank you, Spender. Thank you.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Have you tried to buy any lumber lately? Well, if you have, then the prices on the various grades of wood must have shocked you. One very good reason for these prices is the growing shortage of good timber in the United States. And Mr. Average American himself is contributing to that shortage in a large measure. How? By starting forest fires. 9 out of 10 of our forest fires are man-made. Last year, there were thousands upon thousands of forest fires in the United States. These fires destroyed enough trees of saw timber size to build 86,000 five-room houses. Every man, woman, and child in America must enlist in the drive to prevent this terrible waste of our natural resources. Be sure you do not start one of these disastrous fires while driving, picnicking, or camping in forests or woods. And now, back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Perhaps you've guessed who the president was when all this happened. It really did happen, you know. So listen carefully. The Republicans and the Democrats got upon rostrums, and the presidential campaigns went on. Ex-Senator Thurman of Ohio went on record as follows.
I've seen a good many presidents in my long life. I've known several of them personally, and I've read the history of the administration of them all. I've seen and I know our President of the United States. And on my honor, as a man who is bound to tell the truth, I don't believe that a more honest, braver, truer man ever filled the presidential chair of the United States.
That was the opinion of ex-Senator Thurman of Ohio. The Republican opposition said,
we are uncompromisingly in favor of the American system of protection. We protest against its destruction by the president and his party. They serve the interests of Europe. We will support the interests of America.
Now, on the other hand, James Russell Lowell said, in behalf of the president,
we are here to felicitate each other that the president's chair has a man in it. And this means that every word he says is weighted with what he is. We are here to felicitate each other that this man understands politics to mean business, not chicanery. Plain speaking, not talking with us in a double sense. That he has had the courage to tell the truth to this country, without regard to personal or party consequences, and thus to remind us that a country not worth telling the truth to is not worth living in.
And on the other side of the fence, the Republicans said,
the president is playing into the hands of England. He's a free trader. This measure is not called for by the people. It is not an American measure. It is inspired by importers and foreign producers who want to diminish our trade and increase theirs.
Yes, sir, that's what the Republicans and the Democrats were saying in their respective corners. And then, as Election Day came closer, the Republicans hatched a little plot.
All we have to do is convince the people that the president's acting in the interests of England. And we've got him where we want him. And I'll tell you how we can do it. We'll have someone write a letter to the British minister, Lord Sackville West. And if his lordship bites on the bait, that's all we need.
And so one morning, Lord Sackville West received in his mail a charming letter.
Well, I say, this is really interesting. Helen, get your book. We'll answer this one right away. It's from Mr. Charles F. Murchison, a naturalized British subject who lives out in the wilderness someplace.
Where?
Says, Pomona. And he's writing to inquire how a Britisher who's loyal to England, even though he is a naturalized American, should cast his vote for president. Well, well, well. We'll answer this one at once. Have your book, Helen?
Yes, sir.
My dear Mr. Murchison, you are probably aware that any political party which openly favored the mother country at the present moment would lose popularity, and that the party in power is fully aware of this fact. The Democratic Party, however, is still desirous of maintaining friendly relations with Great Britain, so therefore I would suggest that...
President, have you seen the paper? Have you seen tonight's paper?
What are you so excited about, Martin?
Well, let me spread out the paper and show you why I'm excited.
British ministry advises naturalized American to vote the Democratic ticket. What?
15 days ahead of election, this had to happen.
But this is incredible.
Well, take any paper you want. They've all got the story. The New York Sun says that if the letter's a forgery, Lord Sackville should denounce it immediately, and that if it is not, he should be sent his passports at once.
Martin, kindly see that Lord Sackville West comes here immediately. Malone, I find it very hard to believe that you actually wrote this letter.
Well, now, why shouldn't I write the letter? The man wrote asking my advice. He had every right to ask, and I had every right to answer. I only gave my opinions.
As a British minister, you have no right to advise American citizens how to vote.
Mr. President, I protest that I have a right to an opinion. Sir, I must say that I think you take an exaggerated view of the importance of this matter.
Exaggerated view? Well, your statement makes it look as though I was fighting for this tariff purely for the good of your country. Lord Sackville West, you are guilty of unpardonable conduct. And I'm going to ask the British Prime Minister to recall you immediately. And if he does not, I will send you your passports myself. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Mr. President, you aren't eating your corned beef and cabbage.
What? Oh, I'm sorry, my dear, I'm sorry. I don't seem to be very hungry.
You need your strength. After all, tomorrow's election day. I'm kind of excited. I've been trying to figure out who I would vote for.
Madam President, if you could vote, naturally you'd vote for me.
Oh, I don't know. After all, I am an American citizen, and I have a right to pick my man.
Well, didn't you?
I certainly did. And I dragged him to the altar and had the armed guard lined up behind him so he couldn't get away.
Thank you, my dear, for not letting me get away.
Now, you're beginning to believe that story.
We're going to be out of office by tomorrow night, lady. And you and I are going to settle down next year and live the way real people should live.
You're so sure of losing.
Yes. But I still say I'd rather have my name to that tariff measure than be president.
Hello, Mr. Spender. Martin.
Well, Mr. President, it's all up.
We lost.
Yes.
But, interestingly enough, Mr. President, you won the popular vote.
I did?
You did. By over 100,000 votes.
You actually only lost the presidency by the vote of New York City. If someone sympathetic to you had been running in New York State instead of Governor Hill, we might not have lost New York.
I'm sorry, darling.
I'm sorry, too, Mr. President.
Well, Let's not have long faces about it. One party has won and the other has lost. That's all there is to it. Perhaps I did make a mistake from the party standpoint. But as chief executive, I still feel it was the right thing to do.
Well, maybe the next time you'll listen to some of the rest of us.
The next time?
The next time?
Of course. 4 years from now. Anything you don't need, Madam President, just pack in boxes and put in the basement. Because you'll be back in 4 years.
Oh, you're crazy.
No, he's not. The people want you, Mr. President. And they'll put you right back here 4 years from now. You see if they don't. That popular vote means something.
Well, I hope if they do, by then the tariff will be completely straightened out. It has a good chance now.
I think perhaps I will store something in the basement.
Do you want to come back, Francis?
I think perhaps we should.
Well, gentlemen, in that case, let us consider the matter settled. If my wife says we'll come back in 4 years, then we'll come back in 4 years. No matter what the Republicans say about it. Well, you've probably figured out by now who the president was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
That greatest of all ballad singers, Burl Ives, will be singing folk songs in his own wonderful style this evening over your ABC station. The Wayfair and Stranger will be featured in a program of early American music, folk melodies, and work songs. The great American poet, Carl Sandburg, has hailed Ives the mightiest ballad singer of any century. And we know you'll agree that hearing him sing a folk song is an experience that's to be treasured. Now you can listen to Burl Ives every Sunday evening while Walter Winchell is away. This great artist has made a life study of American folk music, and his songs come from every part of the country. Be sure to listen to Burl Ives tonight on your ABC station. Now here again is Edward Arnold.
There's the executive mansion, and it looks just like it did 4 years ago.
And you dragged me back, didn't you?
I dragged you back.
Well, naturally.
Oh, of course, just like I dragged you to the altar.
The same way, exactly. You know, it's a good thing you're so pretty. That's all I've got to say.
Well, history won't say I dragged you here. History will say that the American people paid you the very great compliment of calling you back to serve once more. Because of your integrity and honesty. And because they knew that in all of America they could never find another president like Grover Cleveland.
Be with us again next week, won't you, for another exciting story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Goodbye.
Edward Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Any Number Can Play, starring Clark Gable, Alexis Smith, Wendell Corey, and Audrey Tata. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by Dick Woolen. Today's story was based on incidents in the life of President Grover Cleveland.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.